You know that that specific feeling of terror? I don't care how long you've been in this space. There is this universal cold sweat moment when you're hovering your mouse over the send button in a crypto wallet.
Oh, yeah.
You're just staring at this string of absolute nonsense letters, numbers, whatever, and you have this sinking feeling that if you got a single character wrong, that money is, it's not just going to the wrong person, it's just evaporating.
It is the ultimate measure twice, cut once scenario. In, traditional banking, you've got a safety net. If you wire money to a routing number that doesn't exist, the bank usually just it bounces it back. In crypto, the blockchain just executes. It doesn't care if you made a typo.
And that anxiety, it really stems from the fact that we're interacting with raw code. We aren't sending money to John Smith. We're sending it to some cryptographic address.
Yeah.
So that is what we are unpacking today. We're doing a deep dive into the digital gateway, the public address. We're going to dismantle the architecture of these strings, explain why they look the way they do, and tackle that massive tension between security and privacy.
And that tension is where the real nuance is. I think most people get the basic mechanics, but they miss the implications. We sort of assume that because an address is a random string, it's anonymous, or that because it's public, it's safe to just plaster everywhere. The reality is, well, it's so much more complicated.
So let's start there with the architecture. The sources we're looking at today all use this foundational analogy to separate the public address from the private key.
The email versus password comparison.
It's a bit of a cliche, but it does the heavy lifting for the basics.
It's the quickest way to visualize the permissions. Think of your crypto address exactly like your email address. It's an endpoint for receiving things. You can put it on a business card, post it on Twitter, whatever. If someone has your email address, they can send you stuff. They cannot, however, log in and read your sent mail.
And the private key is the password. That's the login. If you have the private key, you have total control. You can move funds, you can sign things, you can drain the wallet.
Precisely. And in this world, that password isn't something you can just reset by calling customer support. If you share the private key or the seed phrase that generates it, you basically just hand it over the vault. But sharing the public address is functionally necessary. You can't get paid without it.
So we established that distinction. Share the address, guard the key. But here's where I want to push deeper. We say share the address, but I mean, have you looked at these things? They're ugly.
Yeah, they are.
They look like a cat walked across a keyboard. And they look completely different depending on which chain you're using.
They do, but that visual chaos is actually highly engineered. It's not random. It's a specific encoding designed to prevent errors.
You're talking about things like Base 58, right?
Right. Let's take a look at the design philosophy there. If you look at a standard Bitcoin address, you'll notice something is missing. You will never see the number zero, the capital letter O.
Ah, because in certain fonts, a zero and an O look identical.
Exactly. Or the uppercase I or the lowercase L.
Same problem.
Exactly. Satoshi Nakamoto and the early developers, they implemented Base 58 encoding specifically to remove those ambiguous characters. They wanted to minimize the chance you'd handwrite an address and mistake one character for another.
That's a fascinating detail. It's human proofing the code, but then you look at Ethereum and it went a totally different direction.
Yeah, Ethereum uses hexadecimal. That's why it always starts with that 0x prefix. It uses numbers 0 through 9 and letters A through F. It doesn't bother with the base 58 safety rails, but that 0x is a standard computer science signifier that just says, hey, what follows is a hex string.
And that prefix is actually a critical safety feature for us as users, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the number of times I've seen people panic because they aren't sure if they're sending to the right network.
It is the fingerprint of the blockchain. If you're copying an address and it starts with 0x, immediately you're dealing with the EVM ecosystem. So Ethereum, Arbitrum, Optimism, Base, all of them, they share that address format.
Whereas Bitcoin has its own evolution. I was looking at the history and it's actually changed over time. We had the original one starting with
Why do I see
then
address?
the multi-sig one starting with 3, and now the modern standard is BC1.
And that BC1 format is called Bech32. It's native SegWit. And we don't need to get bogged down in the technicals of SegWit itself, but from a user perspective, BC1 addresses are just cheaper to use. They save you money on transaction fees. So recognizing that prefix isn't just about safety, it's about efficiency. If you're still using a wallet generating addresses starting with a 1, you're probably overpaying.
And that connects to the so what of all this. Blockchains are, they're distinct islands generally. You cannot send Bitcoin to an Ethereum address.
It's like trying to send an email to a phone number. The protocols are just incompatible.
In many cases, a modern wallet will actually stop you. Mm. They have checks and validation.
Yeah.
If you paste a Bitcoin address into an Ethereum field, the math won't check out and the send button will just stay grayed out.
But,
and this is a big but, if you are interacting directly with a smart contract or using a bridge or, you know, some less user-friendly interface, that safety rail might not be there.
And the result is that digital void we talked about at the start.
The funds are burned.
Yeah.
Irretrievable. So, yeah, recognizing these patterns, the BC1 versus the 0x versus, you know, the base 58 of Solana, that is your first line of defense.
Okay, so we got the address formats down. Now, I want to challenge the security model a bit. We tell people it's safe to share the public address because it's mathematically linked to the private key, mm-hmm. but in a way that stops anyone from working backwards.
Mm-hmm.
But how confident are we in that one-way street?
This brings us to elliptic curve cryptography, or ECC.
Which sounds incredibly complex, but the source material uses a great analogy for it, the egg.
It's a simplification, for sure, but it holds up. Think of the private key as the raw egg. You can crack the egg to get the white and the yolk. That's basically the process of generating the public key. It's easy to do.
Right. Gravity does the work.
But now try to reverse it. Try to take the yolk and the white and shove them back into the shell and seal it up perfectly.
You can't. The entropy has increased. You can't uncrack the egg.
In cryptographic terms, we call this a trapdoor function. It is trivial to go one way, private to public to address, but computationally infeasible to go the other way.
When you say infeasible, you mean impossible with current technology, right?
Correct. We are talking about needing more energy than exists in the sun to brute force a single private key from its address using today's computers.
Okay, that settles the security anxiety for me. Sharing the address does not give away the key. But this brings us to the meat of today's discussion, the glasshouse paradox.
Because just because something is secure doesn't mean it's private. And I think this is where most people get tripped up.
Absolutely. There is this persistent myth that crypto is anonymous. It is not. It is pseudonymous.
Yeah.
And there's a massive industry blockchain forensics dedicated to peeling back that pseudonymity.
So let's play this out. I send you $20 in crypto for lunch. I give you my address or you give me yours. What have I actually just revealed to you?
Well, the moment you send that transaction, you have linked your real-world identity to that string of characters. I now know host speaker sent me this money. I can look up that address on a Block Explorer.
And see everything.
Everything. I can see your current balance. I can see that 5 minutes ago, you moved a large sum from an exchange. I can see every single person you've paid in the last year from that address.
That's intrusive enough, but it gets worse, doesn't it? It's not just about that one address. It's about clustering.
Right. This is what companies like Chainalysis do. They use heuristics to link different addresses together to form a wallet profile. For example, if I see you sending money from address A and address B to pay for a single thing, I know that address A and B belong to the same person.
So if I have my like public facing wallet for coffee and my life savings wallet that I keep in cold storage and I make the mistake of sending funds directly between them.
You have doxed yourself. You've cryptographically proven that those two piles of money belong to the same entity. That separation is gone, and the blockchain never forgets that link.
This is where the whole concept of the HD wallet, the hierarchical deterministic wallet, comes in, right? Because most modern wallets don't just use one address.
Correct. If you look at your Ledger or your Trezor, you'll notice that for Bitcoin, every single time you click receive, it generates a brand new address.
It's like having a disposable email for every single transaction.
Exactly. But behind the scenes, all those disposable addresses are derived from one master key, the XPub, or extended public key.
So the XPub is kind of like the master map.
It's the blueprint. If you share your XPub with someone, say an auditor or a tax app, they can see every single address you have ever generated and every address you will ever generate in the future.
That is such a crucial distinction. Sharing an address leaks your history for that one slot. Sharing an XPub leaks your entire financial existence.
Which is why you should treat your XPub almost as carefully as your private key.
Mm-hmm.
It can't steal your funds, no, but it can completely destroy your privacy.
Speaking of destroying privacy, let's talk about dust attacks. This was a concept in the research that really surprised me. It's a way for hackers to force you to dox yourself.
It's a clever, if malicious, tactic. Someone sends a tiny, tiny amount of crypto dust to your wallet, We're talking fractions of a cent. You might not even notice it's there.
I've seen this. I open my wallet and see random tokens or like a tiny bit of SOL I didn't buy. I just assume it's spam.
B is spam, but it's spam with a tracking beacon. The attacker is hoping that one day you'll go to send a transaction and your wallet will automatically sweep up that dust to make up the total amount needed.
And the moment I spend that dust,
you combine it with your other funds.
Yeah.
You create a transaction that links the dust address to your main holdings. The attacker who is watching that dust now knows, aha, the person who owns this random address also owns this massive whale wallet. They've successfully clustered you.
So the counter move there is simply, don't touch it. Just leave it alone.
Don't touch it. Most modern wallet software lets you mark as unspendable or just hide those small balances so they don't get mixed in.
It's wild that receiving free money can actually be an attack vector. Now, moving to usability. We all hate the long strings. 0x71C is a nightmare. So we have ENS Ethereum Name Service, myname.f.
Which is the DNS of crypto, basically. Just like you take google.com, instead of an IP address, you can type satoshi.f.
It's fantastic for usability, but based on everything we just discussed about privacy, isn't it also a massive target?
It is the ultimate double-edged sword. If you register your real name.f and use it for everything, you have effectively painted a giant target on your back. Everyone knows exactly who owns that wallet.
And because of the reverse lookup nature of it, if I know your address, I can check if it has an ENS name attached, right?
Yes. So if you're trying to be anonymous, buying an ENS domain is probably the wrong move, unless you're using a pseudonym that can't be linked back to you. But even then, if you fund that anonymous wallet from your Coinbase account that has your ID attached, the chain is visible.
It always comes back to the on-ramps and off-ramps. The blockchain is transparent. The only privacy you have is that gap between your physical identity and your digital address.
And that gap is getting smaller every day.
All right, let's pivot to the practical survival guide. We've established the anxiety of the send button. We've established the privacy risks. How do we actually operate safely?
Okay, the first one is defending against the clipboard hijacker.
This sounds like malware from the early 2000s, but it's still very active.
It is incredibly common. You copy an address, Crystal plus C. A background process on your computer, if it's infected, detects that string looks like a crypto address. It instantly swaps it in your clipboard for an address the hacker owns.
So I hit Crystal plus V, and I see a crypto address appear. It looks right. It's the right length. It starts with 0x.
But it's not the address you copied. And if you don't check, you send the money straight to the hacker.
So the defense here is the first four, last four rule.
At a bare minimum, always check the first four characters and the last four characters. The middle is usually safe if the ends match, because generating an address that matches both the start and end of your target address is statistically almost impossible for a hacker to do on the fly.
That's good to know. So you don't have to read all 42 characters. Just verify the bookends.
And use the whitelist feature in your wallet. If you send to the same addresses frequently, like your own cold storage, save them. Don't copy-paste every time.
And then there's the golden rule of large transfers, the test send.
This is non-negotiable.
Yeah.
If you are moving a significant amount of money, whatever significant means to you, you send $5 first.
Mm-hmm.
You wait for it to confirm. You verify it arrived. Only then do you send the rest.
I know people who skip this because they don't want to pay the gas fee twice.
Think of that gas fee as an insurance premium. Is it worth paying $2 extra to ensure you don't lose $10,000? It's the cheapest insurance you will ever buy.
I think that's the perfect mindset. We are our own banks here. There is no fraud department to call. The validation has to come from us.
That's the trade-off. Sovereignty requires responsibility.
So to recap the deep dive today, we've decoded the jargon. We know BC1 means Bitcoin SegWit and 0x means Ethereum, and that Base58 exists to save us from our own bad eyesight.
We established that the math, the egg, protects the key from being derived from the address, making it safe to share.
But safe does not mean private. We are living in a glass house. The blockchain ledger allows for clustering, and things like XPubs and dust attacks can reveal way more than we intend.
And finally, the practicals. Beware the clipboard malware, use whitelists, and always, always do a test send.
It really reframes that moment of hovering over the send button. It's not about terror anymore. It's about a checklist. It's about understanding the machine you're operating.
Competence kills fear.
I love that. Now, before we wrap up, I want to zoom out. We've talked a lot about the mechanics, but where does this leave us philosophically? We're building a financial system on a public ledger.
Well, it leaves us with a fascinating paradox for the future. We're moving toward a world where the bank vault is transparent. Mm-hmm. The walls are made of glass. Everyone can verify the gold is there. That's the beauty of the blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
But the privacy of the individual depositing that gold is constantly under siege.
It feels like privacy is no longer the default setting.
It isn't. In the analog world, cash is private by default. Huh. In the digital blockchain world, transparency is the default. Privacy requires active engineering, things like zero-knowledge proofs or privacy pools, which are being developed. But for the user today,
yeah,
you have to understand that every transaction is a permanent public statement. So the question isn't just, is my money safe? It's, is my history safe?
That is a heavy thought to leave us with. The walls are glass, so you better be careful what you do inside the house.
Precisely.
Thanks for guiding us through the gateway today.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to The Deep Dive. Stay curious, check your clipboard, and we'll catch you on the next one.